I have bad news and good news for you. Bad news and good news. Right? We got to start with the bad. You got to end on the high note. Here's the bad news, y'all. You have to learn in public again. I'm so sorry. I know. There are so many ways in which there's a bait and switch in these careers that we're in. There are so many. But here's another one. You have to learn in public again. You got to come right back out outside, and you have to be willing to try and iterate in public. You have to be willing to put up a boundary and have it not work and have people question it and be like, oh, that was the wrong one. You have to be willing to try out a different way of communication and then miss something and be like, oh, shoot, okay, I didn't do it quite right, and understand how to audit and go back. You have to be willing to learn in public again. You have to be willing to disappoint people enough so that you learn how to manage that relationships where you might disappoint somebody.
Hello, hello. You are listening to Your Unapologetic Career. Being a woman of color faculty in academic medicine who wants to make a real difference with your career can be tough. Listen, these systems are not built for us, but that doesn't mean we can't make them work for us. In each episode, I'll be taking a deep dive into one core growth strategy so you can gain confidence and effectiveness in pursuing the dream career you worked so hard to achieve. All you have to do is tune in to Your Unapologetic Career with me, your host, Kemi Dole, physician, surgeon, researcher, coach, and career strategist, for an always authentic, sometimes a little raw, but unapologetically empowering word. I keep it real for you because I want you to win. Okay, I don't know about you, but for me, whenever I'm trying to learn something new or integrate something new in my life, I really need to see it written down. I need a framework to understand how to make it come alive for me, and also so I can adapt it to make it work for me. And that's what I was thinking about when I started writing the KD Coach Foundation newsletters way back in 2019. I spent about 18 months writing these twice a month, thinking about all the ways in which I could communicate really clearly and honestly, briefly, about some career shifting tactics, strategies, and perspectives that can truly change people's experience of their career. Now, let's be honest, some of these were great, some of them were good, and some of them were just a really good try. But what I've done is compiled them into a digestible format of all of the great ones. I want to be able to keep this knowledge going. I got so many messages over and over again about how much the newsletters were changing people's approach to their productivity, the approach to managing their sanity and their energy during the week, and their approach to thinking about how to translate the goals and the desires of their career into functional, actual actions in their day in and day out experience. If you're interested in any of that, I really encourage you to sign up for our newsletter, the KD Coaching Foundations. It's free 99 and you can sign up at www.kemidole/foundations. Once you sign up, you will get one of these top tier, best performing, most cited newsletters from that period of time in your inbox every 2 weeks. I share these because I know, honestly, a lot of people are never going to sign up for Get That Grant. A lot of people are not going to be able to access the coaching we do because we're unapologetically focused on women of color faculty in academic medicine. But hey, I still want to help our entire field. I want to start a revolution. So if you haven't checked it out yet, definitely sign up at www.kemidole.com/foundations to check out our Career Foundations series.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking today about, I think, what is an internal problem that results in, you know, essentially people not seeing the kind of progress that they want to see in their own career development and kind of in their own sense of control over their career. But I would say that that's the beginning step. But then what happens very quickly is when you don't see that progress and you don't have an increasing sense of ownership and agency in your career, what this quickly turns into
is no longer believing it's really possible. And so that's really why I'm recording this, because it's very hard to, what I would say is that it's very hard to dig yourself out of that place once you're just so certain that it's not actually possible for you to have a more enjoyable, paced career that is still successful and busy at times and fun and challenging and all of those things. That's why we're going to talk today about what I want to call passive learning versus active behavioral change. And I'll get into what I mean by that. And I also just want to kind of shout out one of the impetuses, inspirations, I think is the word I'm looking for, behind this episode in general, which was that I was speaking to a client. This actually wasn't that recently, but it's been percolating in the back of my mind. But I was speaking to one of our faculty and Get That Grant. She is a woman of color. You know, she has a mentor who is a, you know, mid to senior career woman of color. And so she was telling me about how when she was considering whether to enroll in Get That Grant, so in our coaching program, she was considering it. And similar to many decisions, she went to speak to her mid to senior career mentor about it. And the mentor ended up saying something along the lines of like, you know, I don't really think you need it because there's like plenty of career development kind of offerings. And like at the end of the day, you know, if you really want to be successful, you just do what's required. You're just going to have to do what's necessary to like just get to the level where I'm at. And so like, you know, I don't really see that there's much there. Okay. So obviously this person, you know, took this information in and signed up anyway. But she didn't tell me the story up front at all, which is fine. You know, like I recommend get input for as many people as helps you make a informed decision for yourself. But what she was reflecting on was part of the reason why she signed up. And this is like a story, but this is such a common story. So I'm telling it because it's a common story. So please don't try to inspect your gadget your way into figuring out like who this is, because this is like, this probably happens to 30 to 50% of people that come into our coaching circles. But what was interesting is that, you know, once she was in it, she was like, you know, it's really funny because even if I wasn't as explicitly clear about this, I would say that like one of the things that was pushing me was looking at my mentors who are women of color and successful and going, okay, I do want to do that. I want to be successful, but like, not the way they're doing it. Like, not that way. Like, is there a different way? So she was able to really see that like, part of it was like, I was trying to go somewhere different. I wanted to go to the same place, but I wanted to get there differently. And the other thing is that as she was in the program continuing on, it became like more and more very apparent, crisply apparent, how some of the bedrock things that we coach around and talk about in terms of boundaries, saying no, how you're making decisions, what you're considering, how you're creating a schedule and a balance that works for you, regardless of what it looks like to anybody else. Like all of these things were not very present for this mentor. Again, this person was successful by all of our external metrics, but their success was hand in hand, right? Linked together, defined together with suffering is what I would say. I mean, maybe that sounds like dramatic, but I would say it was linked together with the sense of like, well, you're just going to have to work at night. You're just going to have to work over the weekends. You're just going to have to say yes to the thing and be gone when you don't want to be gone from your family. Like, you're just going to have to do these things. And what's really interesting, I feel like this story is so long as an intro. So, I mean, it is what it is, y'all, is that as she went even more into the program, she was like, you know, what's really interesting is that I'm not actually sure that my mentor is where she really wants to be, actually. Like, she is successful from these metrics, but now that I have like a different lens, now that I have a different kind of awareness, I can see that she wants more. She wants different. She wants other things. And she's being passed over for things that she wants. And so that is my inspiration here.
that story and the many, many stories that are very similar, because I'm actually moving from the perspective of that mentor, you know, that I think was trying to give very good advice, right? She was being very thoughtful. And in her mind, she was like, there really isn't much else to learn about this job other than, like, you know, have good skills, be a good writer, know how to take feedback, make sure you can get your grants in, you know, and work hard. And so obviously I disagree, but I want to talk about how I think we get there. So first of all, one of the things that happens when we transition from training to faculty, just to take it back, we're going to get back into like the mid-senior life. But like one of the things that happened, I think, when we transition from training to faculty is that we go from learning in public to learning in private. And what I mean by that is if you go back even another step, and I'm going to use the lens of medical school and academic medicine, but you all can obviously translate it as needed, is that, you know, in medical school, at least at the beginning, like your learning is private. It's the standard, like you go read, memorize, regurgitate, et cetera. Yes, there's small groups. Yes, there's even clinical rotations, sure, but you still have to do the shelf exams, right? Like a lot of your learning is done in private, and you can be really successful and you can get honors in a lot of your preclinical and a lot of your preclinical work and be amazing without really having to, you know, do any of your learning in public. You can do it all behind closed doors. And then in medical school, you move to your clinical rotations. And I think we've all seen, I mean, I'm talking to high achievers here. So I think we've all seen people struggle with that transition because all of a sudden, like, there's much more public learning. It's not 100%, but there's more like you got to publicly perform here. You know, you got to learn on the go quickly. Now, I would say there's still a whole lot of private learning too, right? There's a, still a whole, like you still got to take your exams. They'll still influence your grades, et cetera. But there's a shift towards more learning in public. Then you hit training. Oh my God. So then you hit residency. Then you hit fellowship. And it's like, boo, you are learning in public 24/7. Like you're an intern. You're like, where is the bathroom? And also, how do I put in an order for potassium? Like, you are not going to be a great trainee. You will not be the resident that everybody's like, oh, she's amazing. You will not be the fellow that everybody relies on if you are not willing to learn in public. Like, you have to be like, oh, I don't know how to do this. Can you show me how to do this? How do I put in this order? How do I do this thing? How do I remember when I was a resident and I was like at a place where I was learning how to do like amniotomy, which is breaking the bag of water for pregnant people, by the way. I was learning how to do that. And except like, you know, I didn't know how to do it. I was like, you know, I was interned on labor and delivery and, you know, they're like, go into this room. Like, this woman needs an amniotomy, like go for it. And I was like, go. I was like, it was before the kind of, you know, biofeedback thing happened where I finally kind of visualized it in my mind and make it happen. But here's the thing. Also, I think because of my experience, third year, et cetera, is like, I had to learn in public. It's not like I could go read a book and go in the background somewhere and be like, okay, let me just figure this out. I'll just figure all this out. And then come out and be like, okay, I can do it. Don't worry. I had to learn in public. I had to fail in public constantly, right? So that's what training is. And I remember this, like one of my shifts, I remember being like, I would just like everybody to know that I'm going to break a bag of water this shift. Like, I don't know what has to happen, but I will do it. But to be willing to do that is actually how you get more help, right? Because then people are like, okay, let's go. You're going to do it. Now everybody's on board with this goal. So I say that to say that, like, you know, if you're in academic medicine, you have been in an experience. You've had the experience of having to shift into learning in public just by virtue of having gone through your clinical training. And it's hard. It's hard, especially when you've been able to, up to that point, achieve, do a lot of the messy middle stuff, a lot of the learning stuff behind closed doors. It's hard. So one, you're used to being behind closed doors. But when you have to learn in public now, especially as a woman of color, it's doubly hard because there's no guarantee that you're in a safe environment. In fact, the most likely thing is that you're not in a safe environment, right? That there are elements of your environment that are unsafe, or people that are unsafe, or people that don't necessarily have your best interest at heart, or people who have an impossible standard for you to cross for them to ever even give you respect, right? So it's hard because you're not in a safe environment. You still have to learn in public. It's hard because you get conflicting directions. Like, you all remember in training, it was like, well, this person told me to do it this way. This person told me to do it this way. This person, and you're just like, oh my gosh. Right? So again, here you are learning in public, but it's like, you're doing something. You're like, oh, you think you're doing it right. And somebody's like, why are you doing it that way? And you're like, well, because Dr. So-and-so told me. And they're looking at you like, I don't care. That's not the correct way. So you get conflicting direction. And then also the stakes are high. We're learning clinical care. The stakes matter. So also you have all that other pressure of first do no harm. Can we not harm the patients? You know, which was like when going back to my example, that was part of navigating. You know, what I was navigating is like, okay, I really don't want to harm somebody. I don't want to hurt somebody, but I have to learn how to do this thing. Okay. So I say all that to say that learning in public is hard. However, you can do it. You can do it. You did it. Not only did you do it, you did it despite all of these hard things, like all these extra things that make it even more difficult to be vulnerable enough to learn. But at the same time, it makes sense that after all of that, after years of having to try and fail and iterate in public, etc., when we transition back into faculty, what is really exciting and welcoming is this idea that we get to learn in private again, right? And I think that this is like tacitly supported, right? By this, you know, the transition in the title. Now you're attending, you're like the new big boss, right? Like, I mean, I think we all understand there's like lifelong learning that happens, but at the same time, you really do recognize that people are like, okay, now you know what you're doing, whatever, whatever. And you can kind of go back. And I think this happens a lot is that people kind of go back to either actually or very much wanting to be able to learn in private again. And one example that I just want to throw out there, this is not clinical. So shout out to all of my non-clinical folks who are listening, is that like, I remember when I was interviewing for faculty positions, and one of the things I was asking about is like, what are the works in progress? We called them WIPs, works in progress. Like, how does that work? Because, you know, I at that point, I already knew coming out of the fellowship, like, I got to have a place where you can work out these ideas, right? Like, you need to have a forum where you can do that. And what was really interesting, one of the places where I was interviewing, they're like, oh yeah, we have one, but they had one for trainees and then a separate one for attendings. They had a separate one for faculty. I thought that was fascinating. I was like, wow. I think that this is part of what that is, right? Is that you shift and like, no, I don't want to do my works in progress. That learning and public exercise in front of the trainees, right? Because that kind of breaks this tacit agreement we all have, right? That after going through this bullshit of training and all in these years of this public, vulnerable learning constantly, that I get to move into a place where I get to like at least collect myself a little bit more. So in this situation, that's how it was showing up, is that like even for a research works in progress, they separated out the faculty, when the faculty would present their works in progress for help or whatever, it was faculty only. But then there was a separate one for trainees where faculty went to. So I get it. I get why it's appealing. I get why we want to shift. I get why we're like, please, Lord, please, please give me my dignity back, right? You know, you got to know it's coming. The problem is when we think about career development, when we think about professional development, when I think about that, I should say, I think about going through a process where you learn how to own, protect, and execute on your value. I think about going through a process that both includes personal growth and professional growth, where you get explicitly clear about the value you bring, but you also learn how to protect that value, right? How to nourish the best things that you do to make them better, to double down, to get better and better on what you do very, very well. You learn how to discern things that are a waste of your time. You learn how to protect that value. You learn how to optimize your microenvironments so that your success isn't based on the chaos of the day. Your success doesn't have to be based on variables outside of your control. Again, you learn how to protect that value so you can move in different spaces without concern about whether or not you will be successful. And then you learn how to execute on that value. So then you take all of that, what you know, how to protect it, and then you cash in. You demonstrate what you can do. You do all of that in a framework for a career that works for you. In fact, that's part of protecting your value, is not burning out, right? In a framework and a cadence and a balance that works for you. So that is what I mean when I say career development. When I say professional development, that's what I'm talking about. And the problem is, by definition, to learn how to own, protect, and execute on your value, you can't do it in private. By definition, it's a public affair, y'all. Because it is all about the interactions we are having. So some of it is personal, right? Some of it is the interaction your thoughts are having with your work and your ideas, right? And I don't want to discount that part, but a lot of it is a public affair, because even the part that is personal, right? Even the part that is about how you talk to yourself and what you consider valuable and all that, it doesn't matter what you do inside if you don't translate that into actions outside. So it's a public affair because it has to do with communicating outward, with interactions that are external, with trying out different kinds of boundaries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have to change how you operate. You have to change how you engage in professional relationships. You have to change how you literally work, which changes your boundaries and changes your communication style and all of those things. So that is part of the process of the own protecting and executing on your value. So here's the issue. We transition to faculty. We're like, thank God. Now I can go back to learning behind closed doors. Like, I miss the days when I could just go to the library, inhale what I needed to learn, you know, regurgitate that bad boy, get my A+ and keep it moving. Like, please, right? There is a place where we just, oh, it feels so good to come back inside us what feels safer. And so what happens is people do quote unquote career development activities, right? People go to workshops. People go to lectures. People do processes that they might have in their institution that are career development. And they're inhaling all of it mentally. They're reading all of it. They're learning about all of it with very little behavioral change. So some of that is because some of the stuff is just too fluff, honestly, and is like, okay, that's a great idea, but what does that look like tangibly? So I want to acknowledge that. I hear y'all that are like, I mean, I would implement something if there was anything to implement. But let's just assume it's really high quality stuff, right? Let's assume it's a high quality experience. It's still the case that we want to be able to kind of learn it, ingest it without having to do any of the like external behavioral change that would lead to different interactions, different communications, essentially being public about it. We want to engage in passive learning for career development instead of active behavioral change because we want to be able to learn in private. It kind of feels like we earned it, right? We should be able to do that. So what happens is you do this leadership course, you do this career development course, you know, you do this experience, you do whatever, and you implement only the things that don't require you to shift the areas that are most resistant, most concerning, most vulnerable, most scary. So you'll implement the things that are just about you and your calendar, which is only like a few things, because basically your calendar is about how you interact with the world. So maybe that was even a bad example, right? But you'll implement the small things. You'll implement the things that don't require you to have to show up differently. Because once you're required to have to show up differently, once you're required to have to change how you're filtering your yeses and nos, to have to disappoint people, once you're required to have to break unbreakable rules, once you're required to have to go differently from the norm of maybe, again, your micro environment, once you're required to do all that stuff, you know what you're doing? Learning in public. You're back. Now you're doing that again. You're learning in public. And people are going, wait a minute, what are you doing? Wait a minute, what do you mean no? All of a sudden, everybody's like, wait, I'm sorry, everybody replied to this email on Saturday. We don't have your response. All of a sudden, you're getting the feedback that makes it clear to you. People can see you, boo. People can see you doing something different. And that's when we retreat. It's like, oh, never mind, right? Because I already passed that point in my life. I'm not doing this learning in public thing anymore. And so, yeah, I do think you have somebody 5, 10, 15, 20 years in their career who can legitimately say, listen, yeah, I've done a lot of the career development stuff. You know, I checked the boxes. I've done all this stuff and, you know, you're fine. There's not really much there. Or maybe, you know, I can show you what it is. That's it. While still simultaneously living within restrictions in their career, while still simultaneously not having the career balance and integration that they want, while still simultaneously really truly operating under the belief that like they really can't control their schedule, like really believing that, that they can do some, but they really can't. It's just not possible. That's how we get there. So here I have bad news and good news for you. Bad news and good news, right? We got to start with the bad because you got to end on the high note. Here's the bad news, y'all. You have to learn in public again. I'm so sorry. I know. There are so many ways in which there's a bait and switch in these careers that we're in. There are so many. But here's another one. You have to learn in public again. You got to come right back out outside, and you have to be willing to try and iterate in public. You have to be willing to put up a boundary and have it not work and have people question it and be like, oh, that was the wrong one. You have to be willing to try out a different way of communication and then miss something and be like, oh, shoot, okay, I didn't do it quite right, and understand how to audit and go back. You have to be willing to learn in public again. You have to be willing to disappoint people enough so that you learn how to manage that relationships where you might disappoint somebody. The only way you're going to learn how to do that, the only way you are going to define for yourself, okay, what is my responsibility here? What do I want it to be? How do I communicate that? The only way you're going to really learn how to, in fact, learn how to apologize when you move out of what you promised, and not an apology that's like, I'm so sorry, I was just so busy, like the non-apology of academics that everybody relies on. The only way you're going to develop professionally, own, protect, execute on your value is if you learn in public. That's the bad news. You got to come back outside. I apologize. I'm sorry. I didn't make up this crazy place, this spinning rock that we're on. It is what it is. But here's the good news. One, you've already done this before, but two, it don't have to be that bad anymore. As opposed to before, when you had no control over the group of people that you're doing this learning with, over your environment, you can be in a safe micro environment. You can be in a safe circle of folks who understand what you're doing, who can help you navigate the most sticky, the most difficult pieces of it. If you're sitting there like, well, I can't imagine trying to do this differently when I'm supposed to be the one who knows how to do everything, guess what? You're in a room of 6, 7, 8 other people who are in the same place. You can be in a safe environment. Number two, you're no longer going to be in a place, you don't have to be in a place where you're getting all of this like conflicting direction. You know, like I'm pointing this out because we conflate all of this with learning in public. And I'm saying, no, learning in public is hard, but it doesn't have to come with all the stuff that clinical training came with, right? So you can do so with clarity, with, again, I don't care what you do. You do my program, do somebody else's. It does not matter. But as long as you are sure that you're undergoing a process that has a theory and a framework that undergirds it, so that there is logic and rationality to how you are building your base skills, adding to them, adding to them, adding to them. Whenever that is the case, right, then you can take it and be like, yes, this is how I adapt this for my career. It always works whenever you have that bedrock. So now you're not dealing with conflict. Don't you remember in clinical medicine where you're like, why are we doing it this way if this is the thing? And then the answer is basically like, well, because we always done it. And you're like, well, what happened to the framework? You're like, what happened to the whole theory then? That's like one of the most frustrating pieces, right? Is like, it's evidence-based until it's not. And FYI, it's not often. What? Right? So you don't have to deal with that kind of whiplash, that kind of confusion. That's very helpful, especially for high achievers. Because once you give high achievers like, listen, this is the framework, this is the theory, this is the idea, this is how high achievers are like, I got it, let's go. Right? Number three, it is still high stakes. Sure, it's still high stakes, but you know what? It's high stakes in a different way. It's high stakes on behalf of your well-being. And I know that we are so good. We're so good at like giving ourselves on behalf of somebody else, on behalf of a patient, on behalf of a project or something that you care about a lot. And you're like willing to do everything, anything, and just give of yourself. And it's risky, but you're giving of yourself on behalf of like helping out this person. And I just want to say that you can take the same risk for you. You can shift and say, you know what? This is high stakes. This is high stakes about my future. This is high stakes about the daily experience of my career. This is high stakes about whether or not I will finish this out feeling like I reached my full potential and enjoyed it. This is high stakes about whether I'm just waiting to retire, whether I'm just counting down. I'll never forget, I went into this woman's office. She was like mid-ish career, and she had like her 15-ish year, literally like countdown going to retirement. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. Like overall, I'm not saying having a countdown is bad, but it was like what it represented was basically like, this is going to be the end of my suffering. And I just, it had a huge impact on me because I was like, I'm not about to enter into some situation where I'm on a 15-year countdown to when I can leave. Absolutely not. So it's high stakes because are you waiting to retire? Or are you ready to cash in on the blood, sweat, and tears you have put in? Here's the thing about it. There's a sunk cost feeling, right? Like newbies are like, anything is possible. Let's go. I know I don't want to do it the default way. So like, you know, I'm ready, right? And that's an exciting energy. And I love it. I love the newbies. I love y'all. Don't worry. But like, there is nothing. I mean, there is nothing like somebody like, listen, I just realized that after 12 years, 15 years of succeeding this one way, I can have all of the same success or more and be way happier, way more fulfilled, way more balanced, and therefore totally change what I even think my top potential is, what I even think my goal is. Do you know how different it feels when you're like, ooh, are you trying to tell me the impossible is possible? Do you know that feeling when something shifts in you and you're like, oh, I just always thought that was impossible and now it becomes possible? There's a giddiness. There is an excitement there. That's what I want for us. To me, those are the high stakes. What does it require though? It requires recognizing that you're going to have to shift from passive learning to active behavioral change. You're going to have to shift from learning in private to learning in public again. And that's an ask. I mean, that's like a, ooh, really? But my question is, I mean, this is high stakes. I think personally, your career is worth it. I personally think that your personal experience of your career is worth it. I am so tired of meeting faculty who have worked so hard for so long and created so much benefit. They have created so much good with their work. They have poured into mentees. They have sacrificed themselves to see other people elevated and celebrated. And yet they don't get to experience the actual enjoyment of their career. And yet for them, it's just a taxing endeavor with these occasional moments of fun, occasional moments of feeling satisfied in a sea of just swimming against the tide, in a sea of just work, 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 work. Absolutely not. We can do better. We can have better. I invite you to consider, where are you still trying to learn in private? If there's an area of your career development, if there's an area of your personal self-leadership skills that you are not satisfied with, whatever it may be, ask yourself, am I trying to learn this in private? Because I want to offer to you at least some component of that stagnation that you feel. In this case, it might have even crossed over into just disbelief. Part of why you might feel like it's not possible for it to be any better is because you have been trying to learn in private. You have been trying to do it in private. I invite you to come back outside. Things have changed. It's different now. And you might just blow your own mind. All right, y'all, take care. Have a wonderful day. I hope you enjoyed this message. If you did, please come and find me on the socials. I am at Kemi Doll, K-E-M-I-D-O-L-L, on all the various platforms. Come and find me. Let me know what you thought. Senior people, you can DM me in private. You can shoot me an email in private. But yeah, I want us all to realize that there's more available. There's more available, but it does take this shift. And the good news is that it's possible. So have a great weekend. Have a great week. Take care. I love you and I mean it. Hello. I'm coming through to remind you that we are starting a listener letter segment on the Your Unapologetic Career podcast. Write in with questions that you have. You can ask me anything. I will decide what I want to answer. You can bring forth challenging situations or suggest topics you might want to hear more about. To do that, you can reach me at podcast@kdollcoach.com. That's podcast@kdollcoach.com with your questions. Please note if you'd like to be anonymous, and I will always do my best to keep you so. Excited to hear from y'all.